Good evening, listeners and avid fans of the Nick Elliott podcast show. And I'm glad you are. Hopefully, you're going to enjoy this one. I'm again joined by my very dear friend and radio presenting legend, Chris Moore. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Nick. Or leg end, you could call
me. Yeah, I could call you a leg
end. A leg end. Yes.
I think, do you? Oh, I think legend's good. You have to work hard to become a legend.
You do indeed, sir.
Yeah.
You do.
It's not something I give out lightly.
Well, you're a legend.
Do you think?
I do. Yeah. Oh. As we're going to discuss a little bit later
on. That you can say that.
No, that's perfectly true, Nick. I think it's fair to say that this broadcast, is that what we call this?
Broadcast.
I think it's going to divert a little bit from our usual frivolousness and what have you.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little darker than, you know, the kind of normal shows that we do, which obviously are light, talking about knackers and bollocks, really.
Well, basically, but not this time.
No, we're going to be quite serious here.
We are, which is unusual for me. And I think for you as well.
But it is.
We'll approach that as we go. So you'd like to set the discussion up?
Well, it's really on the back of the documentary that was filmed about me over the last four and a bit years, which premiered in Norwich in May. And unfortunately, Chris got COVID.
Yeah, would you believe that?
Yeah.
Oh.
Which was a real blast because he was on the VIP guest list to be there. He was one of the people that I wanted there. And unfortunately, he couldn't make it, so he was poorly. But I recently sent him his copy of the DVD, which is now out, Story So Far, obviously, it's called. The DVD's out and available to buy on my shop. That's Nick Elliott shop. At www.nickelliott.photography. You can find it on there. But Chris recently watched it and we caught up a few days back and we kind of discussed his reaction to it and what he thought to the film. I hope that he enjoyed it. So really, we're just kind of going to discuss that, aren't we, Chris? Really?
We are, Nick. And first of all, I've got to say, I'm really sorry that I couldn't have been at the premiere there. But I couldn't.
No. You know,
with the
you
bug.
Were poorly, weren't you?
I really couldn't. Yeah. I couldn't risk it. So.
But did you enjoy the film?
Nick, it was one of the most interesting films I've seen for an awful long time. Not because I know you, because I do, but because it was a fascinating insight into a personality. Something you don't see too often, I don't think. And this is my own opinion, so if you like, this is my take on that DVD of yours. I saw it as a film in two halves.
Right.
First half, it's the chatty, nice Nick that I know. And there were some fantastic bits in there, Nick, that I loved. For example, you said an interesting comment at the top of the video. You said, you're looking for a proper job since 1979.
Yeah, I've been looking for a proper job.
1979 was the first year I went into teaching.
Actually, it was before then, 1971.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
That's how long I've been doing it.
Oh, my goodness sake. So what do you mean by that? Because you got a proper job. You had a proper job.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, it's... what is it they said? I think it was Churchill said it, wasn't it? That to do what you want to do and you'll never do a day's work in your life.
That sounds something about like right. That. That sounds about right, yeah.
Which I've always been lucky enough to do, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's been a hard trip.
Yeah.
And it's not a common way of passing your time. You know, not a lot of people can live with this.
Yeah.
But it's all I've ever done.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
That's what you meant. So what did you mean when you said the line moves all the time? I thought that was a fascinating little quotation.
That's a creative line because basically the reason I do what I do is it's something that's, excuse me, always been inside me from being a very small boy. It took me a long time to actually find that route of where I wanted to go. And although I am a rock art photographer, photography is purely the medium that I use to create the art. What I mean by moving the line is that the line of satisfaction, that there is no satisfaction with me. You know, it's people often say, what's the best shot you've ever taken? And I always answer the next one because I haven't taken it yet.
Right.
So, you know, it's a very strange thing, really. I never achieve. It's a brick in the wall towards the total achievement, which I'm never likely to get to anyway, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this has a destination, but creatively, that destination will never be arrived.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I get that, Nick. I get that.
So, I mean, I move the line every time. So I'll work on a project, I'll work on a shot, and that's fantastic. It's a great body of work or whatever. It's really an awesome shot and I'm impressed with it and I'm my biggest critic. But then it's time to look for the next one that's better than that one. Yeah. So the line of creativity moves all the time.
Right. And I think that's probably true to say, because you spoke an awful lot as well in the first part of that DVD about your school days,
yep.
Which rang a memory with me as well. In particular, the story you came up about the cross country and the avoidance tactic.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I did exactly the same thing, Nick.
Did you really?
Exactly. We had a lap. Well, yeah, two laps ago.
Yeah.
So I too stopped off. Me and my mate Pete, we stopped off at my mother's house, had a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Watched them going round. But we went wrong then. Instead of tagging in at the back or the middle, we tagged in at the beginning.
Ah.
So we crossed the winning line as winners.
Right.
And all these serious athletes.
That was a bit of a mistake.
That was a mistake and a maker. But it was all good stuff. It really was. And I love your tales of school. You know, they were fascinating. Did you enjoy your school days?
I weren't a school fan, in all honesty. I went because I had to go. Did I achieve a lot? Possibly not. Because I lived in a bit of a strange world at school. You know, there was only bits of it that I was interested in. The bits that I wasn't interested in, I had no interest in it. So I was there purely to make up the numbers, really. And as it was described in my kind of closing report when I left, that, you know, I'd hummed my way through my school years.
Your scum years.
Your scum years. Yeah. And I did, really. Yeah. You see, I went to school 9 to 3 or whatever it was. And after that, I was done. You know, I didn't hang with people from school.
No.
I didn't associate in school kind of activities. You know, because I then went home and at that time I was swimming. You know, it was all about music. It was all about the art. Mm. And that's what I dedicated my time to. Mm. My brother was very similar. We kind of did that as brothers, you know. Gary had his interests. I had my interests. But with me, it was an obsession, I managed to carry on into my adult life, you know. So did I enjoy it? Bits of it was all right. It was okay. I mean, formative wise, the last year of being there, and I think I mentioned this in the film, about a guy called Tim Rayner, who was the pottery teacher at Stangren Comp School. And for some unknown reason, they decided that they wanted to kind of change the curriculum, if that's what it's called. And they dedicated a period of time through your school week to a suggested subject that you wanted to do. Tim Rayner was a pottery teacher in the art department, but he was heavily into photography. And he then gave you the opportunity, if you wanted to do a full-time subject, you could do photography. And at that time, I kind of was given my first camera by Dad at the year, about 8 years old. So I was already big time into it because Dad was big time into it. So it was a big gig in our family and our house, you know. And then this came up in the last year of Stangren School, and I had the opportunity then to do photography all the time, you know. And we built a dark room, and, you know, then they did a little school paper, you know, and you went round and shot somebody, you'd just run 100 in whatever it was, you know. And it was my first introduction to proper, we'll say, press photography, which I was lucky enough then to go on to do, you know. So from an informative thing, it was a big deal. It was a big deal. And, you know, I mean, I got on very well with a lot of the kind of teachers and the lecturers and then kind of guys. But then there was a lot because I was very much a maverick. You know, I didn't conform with much at all.
You've just taken my next question.
I did my own shit, really, even then, you know. And that did kind of, you know, you clash swords with a few of them over it. But no, so did I enjoy it, Chris? No, not really, but I didn't not enjoy it.
Right, I can get that. Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. So you've just used the word maverick. Your brother described you as a maverick in that DVD. And I've got a question written down here. Are you? Are you really a maverick?
I think I am. Yeah. I think I am. I think I've always been that. I don't like kind of discipline and rules and things like that. I'm not a revolutionary.
No.
I think I could have been. I could have been easily be a William Wallace. I could have easily been. But no, I'm very much a maverick in the way I am, my personality, the way I dress, the way I express myself, and most definitely in what I do. Yeah, I am.
Right.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, well, that's plain. And then, of course, words were interesting. Like, there was a word on that film, fettling. I've never heard of that word. Fettling, Nick.
Well, it's just fettling. Just a word. It's just a word.
What's it mean?
Well, it kind of means to shape something. You know, that's my terminology of it.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, I'm fettling away.
Did you make that word up?
Yeah, I don't know if I did, to be honest.
Well, I'll have to look it up later.
It's probably just something I said.
Wow. But yeah, the film, the DVD, to that point, I've been laughing with you, Nick. I was fascinated by it. I was fascinated by the whole thing. Nice and comfy. Got myself a cup of coffee, got myself some nice biscuits.
Yeah.
Set myself down. Bang, into part two we go.
Right.
The dark art you mentioned.
Yep.
Put it in your words, very succinctly.
Well, the dark art really is something that has been in the mind of Nick Elliott since being old enough to understand what thinking is about, if that makes any sense. But I never really went into that part of my mind at all. It was something that would rear its head now and again and have this kind of really big urge to do something totally off the fucking wall, off the wall. And again, to move the line, to take it into another place where nobody's ever been before, you know. But the reality of that didn't come until 2018, when my marriage went wrong after 29 years. And suddenly I opened up another part in my head, which was, and I kind of term it as, then my creativity and my artistic side of me and me and I termed it as, you know, the Bowie years, because as in David Bowie, it was when he killed Ziggy and moved into a real creative period, which made him the true artist that he was up until his death. And I had the same kind of experience. And I then, and the key for this really was, Chris, that I didn't give a shit. And it was, I really didn't give a shit, you know, what anybody thought, what anybody thinks, what everybody said, anybody kind of reflected. There was no perimeters for me at all. And I would literally shoot what I wanted to shoot and I'd put it out there.
Right.
And that's exactly what I did.
So within that phrase, the dark art, is there any meaningful or unwise to Satanism in there?
No, I wouldn't say that there is. Not the dark side of you know, spiritualism, if that's what you want to call it. No, that it, there's no reference to that at all. When I say the dark side, I mean the dark side to my mind.
Right.
You know, the first part of the project was the dark side of my mind. And that what I decided I wanted to do from a imagery point of view was I don't write songs. I don't, like you, write poetry or stories or whatever, which is usually the way people conduct through that conduit, heartache, loss, upset, death, whatever. You know, I didn't use that. I used the conduit of imagery. So it's all based on emotion, because that's how I am. I am an emotionally driven person, more so than a realistic person. It's emotional. I talk from the heart, I write from the heart, I shoot from the heart. Yeah, I do that. Whether that's the right way to do things is neither here nor there. You know, like I'll tell somebody I love them if I love them. That's it. Don't matter whether it's a girl, a bloke or whatever. You know, and God, what a great fucking jacket. Or man, you look really good. You know, and I'm very expressive like that. So what I did was I set out to produce bodies of work that were literally produced from an emotion. So how I felt at that particular time, whether that be passionate, hate, anger, love, sexuality, sexual, whatever I'd got in my heart is what I would then create in a photographic image. And that's what I did.
You did it to very good effect, Nick. I've seen many, many of your images online.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
Fantastic. And we were talking a little bit earlier. This is where it really gets a bit spooky. And this is what brought me to tears, Nick, watching this DVD.
Right.
I hope you don't mind me going down this line.
Not at all.
But I can remember seeing a photograph of you with a noose around your neck.
Yep.
And I looked at that online. This is before I knew the backstory, having watched the DVD. I thought, what a great shot that is. Now, what's his mind? How's he doing this? That's a great shot. Never in my darkest moment, Nick, did I think that was for real.
Yeah, it was for real.
I never, ever, ever. And that hit me. I saw the DVD and these images went rolling past my mind of you basically attempting to take your own life, Nick.
Yeah.
It scared the shit out of me.
Right.
And it lasted with me. Well, it has. It will do. It's burnt in there.
Right.
And that's in a good way, because I like to question things.
Yeah.
But all the time, I'd seen these images before, and I thought these were posed shots, you know?
Yeah.
I thought these were artistic interpretations of something. They were goddamn facts, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. But in saying that, they are artistic interpretations.
They're also blatantly near the knuckle.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, but again, Chris, to summarise that, is the fact that that's where I was, emotionally, mentally, every way, shape and form, at that point. So I shot it. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do. I find it very, very difficult to deal with it.
Right, okay.
Because I personally could not, I wouldn't have the balls to do that, Nick.
Right, okay.
I just wouldn't. And there's part of me that says life is sacred, you know, and an attempt to try and end that, to me, doesn't sit comfortably. I do understand why you did.
Yeah.
I do understand that. Thank God you survived it. And I think the expression we came up with, and it says on the DVD, the chair slipped.
Yeah.
Well, I've written that down somewhere, because that sums it up. If it wasn't for that chair slipping, things would have been an awful lot different, wouldn't they?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Now, this goes back to another discussion we've had about fate. Do you think it was fate?
Oh, totally. That
chair slipped?
Oh, yeah. There's no two ways about that. I mean, at that stage, Chris, I was dying. There's no question about that. No. I know that as a medical fact.
Yeah.
And you see, to bring the fate bit into it, when that happened, you know, and to be honest, I wasn't aware at that point it had happened. For some unknown reason, I suppose this is what happens when you die. You cross that point from consciousness to not unconsciousness, you know. But I wasn't aware that that had gone on.
No.
What I then saw was nothing, just black, just dark, nothing, absolutely nothing, just black. And then the next thing I know, I saw a room and there was a chair and a window and my mum came in from the right-hand side of my vision. And the next thing, my mum had walked in, she stood in front of me, and then that was it. I'd woke up. And at that point, Lindsay's getting the rope off me neck, and, you know. But I didn't know where I was. I was in a total mess. I couldn't breathe, and, you know, I was on the floor, and, you know, there's all this shit coming out of my mouth and all this stuff. It was, you know, it was heavy duty.
The images are hauntingly brilliant, if you like. Scary, scary stuff, Nick. For me, just watching that.
Yeah. For me, it wasn't scary, Chris, because, you know, to be honest, I don't fear death.
No.
I haven't done that since I lost my poor mum 29 years ago.
Mm.
I haven't done that. I was there on the night. I was on the bed when I lost my poor mum. And that was, again, in my opinion, another act of Jesus, of I experienced that. I've lived with that for the past 29 years. And the fear of death doesn't any longer become a fear. Because I think it's because, you know, kind of, the general view on that, life's priceless and all this kind of stuff. On that subject, I mean, I've lost three very good friends in the last just over 12 months that have all took their own life.
God.
You know, and people have said, fucking hell, you know, he should have rang, he should have called or whatever. And one I was very close to, this particular incident. I'll keep the story brief. But it was a friend of mine that I was due to go down to London, spend some time with. I rang him up on this Thursday night and said, look, I can't do it next week as we'd booked. Can we rebook? We rebooked it for a fortnight later. I'd known this guy for over 30 odd years. And we were like brothers. We were. And I went off the phone at 20 to 10 on the Thursday night and said, look, Dev, I've got to go, man. I've got to have a bath and, you know, I've got some stuff to do later on. And he said, no worries. Love you, man. Always, blah, blah, blah. By 12 o'clock night, he'd hung himself.
Jesus wept.
You know, I was the last person to speak to him. People turn around and say, what is that about? Well, I know exactly what it's about. I know exactly what it's about. And, you know, people say, coward, you're a coward to do that. You're not. You're a very fucking brave man to actually face it and say, I can't do this anymore.
I do get that, Nick. And I've been through depression, as you know,
for
similar reasons. I had no feelings like you had at all. And I've heard people talk about suicide and they say it is the coward's way out, you know. And I've never expressed an opinion on it because I'm not sure.
No.
I don't know. I have a conviction that life is sacred.
Yep.
And it is not something to be taken lightly.
No.
That's my own personal opinion. I'm not condoning or denying anything anybody else says or feels about the subject. The video for me was difficult viewing, Nick. It was. I won't deny it.
Right.
You know, like a film, you can sit down on a movie picture, you can sit down, can't you?
Yeah.
Put it on power. I paused that DVD of yours. I rewound it. I played it. I couldn't get over a lot of it.
Really?
Yeah. For this very set reason. And I was thinking things like, okay, so Nick is saying to your chap at the time, saying, you've got to record everything, you've got to record everything. Did you at any time think about the repercussions for this guy who you had tasked to record your death, in effect?
It was... That's a bit of a kind of double-edged answer there, really. I mean, he was well aware of what was going on. We spoke about it an awful lot. But not totally, if I'm honest, I didn't. I didn't. I don't think we did. I mean, the whole thing was, you know, it was going to happen whether there was anybody there or not, Chris. That's it's as simple as that. It was going to happen.
The bottom line is, of course, that if that had been successful, I use the word successful advisedly.
Yeah.
If that event had happened, he would have been held to account.
Yeah.
For aiding and abetting.
Yeah, which I, you know, it's we've kind of cleared that up since.
Yeah, good.
You know, we've cleared that up big time because that I would have never, we would have never entered into it under them circumstances. Yeah. I would have done it on my own.
Right.
Simple as that.
But the nice thing is, you know, I don't want to get too morbid, but he was one you say who saved your life.
Yeah, totally.
How cool is that?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I would not be here if it weren't for that.
No. And for, you know, to get to such a depth is, it's enlightening, I think. It shows human emotion at its rawest.
Sorry, Chris, to interrupt you.
No,
one of the things that we decided, I mean, me and Andy Blythe, from A-Turn Films, who shot the film, we spoke about this a lot. But I also wanted, and I suppose this is quite relevant, really, because yesterday was Mental Health Day. Excuse me. And I think that one of the things that I kind of insisted on doing is I wanted people who watched it for the if it had an effect and made people think not about me or the events or what took place, but to take the time and say, I know somebody who's like that.
Yeah.
I should spend more time with them and kind of, you know, go and see them, ring them up, have a coffee, whatever it is. Show some love to people who need it. And everybody does need it. And unfortunately, we live in a country where it is frivolously thrown away.
It's taboo still, Nick.
Well, it is.
No, getting away from
it. No,
it's still a taboo subject.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. But even the word and the emotion of love, whether that be for a man, a woman, whatever it is, mum, dad, dog, cat, whatever, you know, is frivolous. For me, it isn't. It is massively, massively important. It really is. And the deepness of it is massively important. And I wanted people to watch the film and think and stop. Not necessarily, I'm not trying to convey my thoughts or feelings or anything that is in me onto anybody else. Everybody is entitled to their personality, their view, their own feelings. But to just make people stop and think, probably I should be a little bit more caring or I should be a little bit more concerned about something or whatever it is. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
On a wide scale.
Yeah.
Stop being a bastard and take some time out for other people, you know?
Got to ask you one more thing, Nick.
Yep.
You might not like this either.
Yep.
Were you under the influence of drugs or alcohol?
Not at all.
You were totally stone cold sober?
Yep.
So you knew what you was doing?
Yep.
That's honest fact. Right?
Categorically.
Yeah.
Categorically.
Because the look in your eyes in those pictures are haunting, as I said earlier. It's like I was seeing through to your soul.
Yeah, well, it was a revealing of a soul.
Because you were butt naked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought,
Well, again, I did that because I wanted to take it right back to the beginning.
Yes, that's an interesting image.
You know,
yeah. So that, born like that, so why not die like that?
Yeah, yeah. That, you know, I mean, you could have done it in an Armani suit, but that would have been made a statement about fashion. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I didn't want any kind of props that you could kind of say, well, oh, wait, because of this or because of that. No, that none of that matters.
Mm.
None of that matters at all. It's the rawness of why the fuck we're here and the damage that is done to people by being here, if you want to say that.
It's a human condition, Nick. That's what it is.
Well, whatever. Mm. Whatever, Chris, you know. Mm. And it's very easy to hurt people, to upset people, and you never get over that kind of stuff.
No.
You never get over it.
No.
You don't. And it's not good to frivolously give these things away and subject people to hurt and upset. Do you know what I mean? In an ad lib way, as society tends to do in this country now.
Well, we're supposed to be the supreme living creatures, but I can't think of any other animals that mentally hurt people.
No.
Mentally hurt each other, I should say. Dogs don't, cats don't,
no.
Frogs don't.
It's
humans do.
Big time. Mm. Big time. Even if that's a simple case of, I don't know, not saying good morning to somebody, you know, when you kind of eye to eye contact or whatever. Yeah.
Mm.
You know, which again is a common thing here.
Yeah.
It really is.
Oh, people don't make eye contact with each other anymore. No,
manners, no. Politeness, no. You know, it's gone.
It's all gone.
It's gone. And that is not the way forward. Not the way forward.
I'll tell you what is though, Nick, and I mean this with all sincerity, I reckon that film should be put on the national curriculum somewhere. In personal, social, health education.
Do you think?
I see a place for it there.
Really?
I think it'd be hard-hitting. I think perhaps they'd have to have a letter go out to school, you know, parents, saying, do you wish your child to see this? Do you not wish your child to see it? If so, withdrawn, fair, fine. But it's an important statement, Nick. I think you've hit on something big time there.
I think it is an important statement, Chris. I think, you know, it helps to get clarification, like doing a show like this, because it allows me to kind of explain where it came from, which is deep in itself, where it came from. It wasn't a circumstance, really. It wasn't an event. The event and the circumstance was really the catalyst of making this all work. It was just like putting a match to a firework, really. That's what it was. I know that's a bit of a naff kind of statement, but it kind of summarises it well, I think. Because, like I say, it had been... I've always lived in a place, Chris, mentally, that is always, the only person there and only person welcome is me. Because I'm the only person who can understand it, but then in saying that, I've never understood it. I've always kind of termed it just this side of Seine is where I live. You know, people find that odd and very difficult to understand because there has to be narratives, there has to be logic behind people's thinking, but with me, there isn't. There isn't anything. It's all emotion, all of it, all of it. And the events that have taken place in my life have led up to this. You know, the whole title for this particular collection of work, and of which contains about five collections, is loss. Because it's the most dominant thing I can pull out of my life, if that again makes any sense. I know, you know, there's we've had good times and you met some people and all this and the rest of it, but if you was to summarize the whole time on the planet, that's the bit that stands out to me more than anything. Not necessarily life, not necessarily wives, partners, whatever, but even things like the loss of the past, you know, what the fantastic time that you had last week is lost. It's gone because time has moved on and all you're left with is a memory. Does that make any sense?
It does, Nick. Yeah, it does.
So I summarise all that under the title of loss. Because that's what is the dominant part of my life.
Well, Nick, all I can say is I think you did a very, very brave thing indeed in releasing that as a DVD. I think it's got a lot of stuff to tell people. There's a lot of people can learn from it. As I say, it came across to me as a film in two halves. The bright side of Nick Elliott and the dark side of Nick Elliott.
Yeah, which there is.
I don't know if that was a subconscious division, but that's how it came across to me. And I think the whole thing works as a perfect whole. And, you know, I say thank you for doing that, because I actually think that's going to help a hell of a lot of people.
Well, thank you, Chris. I mean, you know, them comments are very valuable to me, and certainly coming from somebody like you, who I respect and think an awful lot of. You know, I'm very interested in people giving their view. I don't ask their view.
No.
You know, and if they don't want to give a view, they don't give it. The film was obviously a documentary, and in the title of that, it depicts the fact that it's about me, which it is. But it wasn't a vanity project.
No.
There was also a big kind of message in it, as with all the images that I shoot. There's the message is look and think and feel. If you get that from anything that I do, well, then my work here is done. Although in saying that, that's not the target of why I do what I do, but I hope that it touches people and they stop, they get inspired, they get, you know, willing to get involved in something else, they get creative, or you get people that react anti against these things. Well, you know, that's fucking stupid. Even if you get those kind of comments, what I set out to do, I've done. Which is provoke emotion and people to think and stop and say, hang on a minute. You know, nothing's stupid.
No.
Nothing's stupid. If you want to take the time and you have the understanding to connect with it, then you can see the reason for it. If, again, that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's deep shit, but that's how I think about things.
And basically just around things like, it's called The Story So Far, Nick, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah. What's to follow, mate?
No idea. No idea, Chris. I mean, I probably wouldn't make another one. No. Although that film could have been 3 hours long without any question, because it is a big story. My life, it is a big story. It's been exciting. It's been good. It's been rock and roll, sex, drugs, rock and roll. It's been all the stuff, you know. But that, again, is not what it's about. It's not about that. It's about that. That's all what goes with this gig. But I'm not really bothered about that. What I'm bothered about is the art and leaving a mark, you know, leaving something that long after my death will live on. I mean, I'm still working on that project. It's in a different guise now. None of these things are ever really finished. But what I would like to do, if you're talking from a kind of professional view, I'd like to have a placement in Tate Modern, V&A, National Portrait Gallery, Photographers Gallery. That's what I feel I need to do to tick the box.
Yeah,
you know, and put my work in the books, so that, you know, from years after this, you'll be able to buy a book or have a book or whatever, and, you know, my work will be in it. That's it, hanging on people's walls and the rest of it. And it still moves people to the same degree as the greats, you know, Da Vinci and the likes.
Nick, it's been marvellous talking to you. I'm rounding this up as if it's my show.
Well, it's our show, isn't it?
I am bereft of any more words, really. Part to say, fantastic job. But I would finish off by saying, Mr. Slick Elliot.
Thank you.
And another little expression you came up with, I'll catch you later.
Yeah.
And I hope I will catch you later, mate.
Well, you will. I should still be around, Chris. We'll be doing more shows, definitely.
Oh, that's brilliant. Do you mind if I cry now?
Chris, thank you ever so much for watching the film. And, you know, thank you for your critique. It's very important to me. It really is. And, you know, you're a great friend, man. A great
Cheers.
Friend.
Cheers, Nick. Cheers.
A great
thank
friend.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And thanks for chatting.
No problem. Anytime. Love you, mate. Anyway, hope you enjoy the show. Sorry if it was a little bit kind of dark and a little bit kind of depressing, but hopefully that's given, you know, you guys out there a bit of an insight to what I'm about and why we did the thing in the first place, the film, and why I do what I do. Keep it loud. Catch you later.
Yeah, God bless you all.